Welcome back. You're listening to Nerd Funnel. I'm Bob Sway, and we're going to funnel all the nerd news in the world into more nerd news. Tonight with me is Steven.
Mortal Kombat!
And Mars.
Snake!
Thanks for all the clipping there, Steven. I'm going to have to.
I like that one.
You like that? I like that. I like that.
I'm Metal Gear fan. What can you say?
God, it's been so long since I played a Metal Gear game.
It's been I watched an LP of five, and you played five, right?
I have played through every Metal Gear game out there. Peace Walker 2. The Metal Gear series is easily my favorite game series of all time.
Yeah, I haven't played Peace Walker. I did 4, which to me is kind of like the end of the series. Like, that was, as far as I could tell, the end of the Snake story. Like, the Solid Snake story. So I wasn't really interested in revisiting it at that point, because I was like, okay, like, I finished the Metal Gear Solid franchise. Like, there are going to be other things about other characters, but I just wasn't that interested.
Coming back to Metal Gear, it's the, like any good franchise, they're really going to milk it, the sub-characters for the stories. Like, they had one, like, I'll take back what I said earlier. I didn't play through every single game. I think Metal Gear Rising, I just watched a bunch of big clips for on YouTube. I really wasn't interested.
What about Revengeance?
You didn't play Revengeance?
I did not play Revengeance. I thought it looked cheesy.
Game was great.
Wasn't it just like a beat-em-up game?
It was like character action. Like, you like Castlevania, right?
I could not take it seriously because, I thought Ryan was just way over the top. Like, there was a scene where he just...
That's the whole point of the game, is it's over the top. It's not supposed to be, you know, sneaking around. It's supposed to be like, you're a cyber ninja, and you've got all these awesome powers, and let's just, like, take it to town.
But that's not the game. Then it's not a Metal Gear game, then.
Metal Gear, I'm a fan of the gameplay, don't get me wrong, but I'm also a big fan of the story, and, like, what they did with Raiden, they just took him in a completely different, like, a very, very superhero-ish, completely off-the-wall direction. they did that with a remake of the original Metal Gear Solid for the GameCube. The Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes, all of a sudden they had Snake doing backflips, jumping off missiles, and all that. What the hell is this?
I'm not disagreeing with you that it's a bad Metal Gear game, but it's a great game. It's fun.
It's a good action game.
It's fun to play. It's just not a great Metal Gear.
Perhaps I can't dispute that there, but, like, in my opinion, that's not really Metal Gear.
I mean, it feels good to play, like, just, like stringing together the combos and, like, learning the move. It's very, like, Castlevania, like...
But the problem is it's Metal Gear, it's not Castlevania.
Yeah,
like, what's next? Like, you're going to have a Metal Gear kart racer?
I was a big fan of Lords of Shadow 2, because, Lords of Shadow, the original one, I wasn't too much a fan of, but Lords of Shadow 2 really hooked me on, because the story... the mythology behind it, and the incredible voice acting by Robert Carlyle and Patrick Stewart, who we all know as Captain Picard. They both did phenomenal jobs, and their acting skills really moved the story along. Lords of Shadow 2 was a little bit... The story was a little... I don't think it was necessarily well done. I think it just jumped around a little bit too
much.
What
was Lords of Shadow about?
It was a complete a remake of the whole Castlevania series.
Like a reboot?
Exactly. But they had several twists on the original storyline. Like, an example, like Dracula. I should back up a little bit. The game's been out for a while. I don't think I'm spoiling it for anyone out there who's listening to this. But, like, essentially, like the whole game deals with the Belmont family. And unlike the original Castlevania series, Dracula in this timeline, he is a Belmont. He's the progenitor of the Belmont line. He's Gabriel Belmont. And the other characters from the Castlevania series, like Trevor and Simon, they're his descendants, and they are trying to kill him because they kind of view Dracula as their responsibility because he came from their bloodline. It's kind of like their family obligation to get rid of him, which is kind of hinted at in the story. It's never explicitly stated, but yeah. And Lords of Shadow 2, you play Dracula. Or Gabriel Belmont, however you want to look at it, and the whole game is a redemption story. It's very, very interesting, very, very intricate, and the voice talents of all the actors really, really help sell it. It's I won't say Lords of Shadow 2 is my favorite game, but it was very, very interesting, and, like, one of the main reasons I play games is because of the in-depth and very, very interesting storylines.
What about the gameplay? Was the gameplay any good?
the gameplay was pretty decent. Like, I liked the
because they ended up putting like a lot of like RPG elements into it too.
They did put a lot of RPG elements. They have several. There's three main weapons that you use. Like, you use the Blood Whip or Shadow Whip, as they call it. There's a sword you use. You have Chaos Claws, and you have to use combinations of these weapons in order to get your way through the game.
But aren't RPG elements kind of in everything now at this point? Like, literally, like, I was playing Madden the other day, and Madden has, like, RPG elements into it. Because, I mean, you're, like, all your players have stats, and you buy different equipment to help them level up, and, like, they get better over... it's, like, everything is RPG.
And then you can multi-class them over from, like, a...
Right. You're a tight end
receiver, now you're tight end.
Right, exactly. Like, it's
now you're,
totally
now you're
right
a tight receiver.
Right.
Sorry.
You have a good point there, Stephen. I think the RPG genre is somehow, in one way or the other, found its way
into everything.
Especially in, like, mobile games. Like, a lot of... and I think that's one of the reasons that, like, with the spread of a lot of mobile gaming... And the addictiveness of it is
a
that
cockliness of
what
it. A cockliness of
a
it
a cockliness is that one of the reasons I play RPGs is I want to get stronger. I want to fill my characters out. And I like doing that to a point. I mean, sometimes it's ridiculous. I mean, like then
no, but for like a mobile experience, it's perfect. Like, the grind of an RPG is perfect to like get people to just constantly play it every day. And then if they don't want to grind, then
they pay money for it.
It's amazing. It's a brilliant business model. Like, it's so great.
Very well done. But, I mean, I think that's one of the ways in which RPG elements have kind of wormed their way into a vast majority of gaming platforms now.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of games that have those leveling up elements. And now, like you said, like a genius business model of like, oh, you're lazy? Didn't just pay money and skip all the leveling up. And
right.
Well,
I mean,
and you level 60.
I realize even in like just regular society now, like people are much more susceptible to like RPG elements in like everything now. Like even in like regular kids board games and stuff, like they do kind of have like these RPG-ish elements. Or like the biggest example is fantasy football.
Yeah.
It's essentially just Dungeons and Dragons for jocks. Like,
yep.
You build a party, and then you take them adventuring against other parties.
Here's the funny thing, and I think this is evidence of just how video gaming has become, has been just introduced into our culture, because, like you said, how video games have kind of found themselves into everything, like, you're using the fantasy football example. I want to like take a step back and take a look at some of the language, some of the slang that people are using these days. Like nowadays, like I work in the IT industry, and it's not uncommon to see some people to say their skills just leveled up.
Oh yeah.
Well, where did you get that jargon from?
Yeah.
It came from video gaming, and like I'm not sure what the stats are, but I remember back when I was a kid, video gaming was considered the exclusive province of males and kids, and like girls would stay away from it on principle,
right,
rather than getting involved in it.
It was prohibitive of
them. Yeah, exactly. And what,
like, playing video games essentially meant
you
were never going to have your dick touched for a long time. Like, that was essentially what it was.
But nowadays it's very, very different. I think, like, now I don't know what the stats are, but I'm pretty sure that there's a large percentage of girls out.
Just as many females play as males now.
Uh-huh.
It just depends. Just the
game. I don't know about that.
I think it's pretty close.
You think it's close to 50-50?
I think it's close to
50-50.
Because it just depends on what kind of games they're playing.
Are you talking about like all across all platforms?
Like
across
all platforms, mobile with like different variations of games.
I would still say it's predominantly male, especially like I guess if you're talking about mobile, then yeah, like there's probably a lot of girls who are playing. You know, real easy, like...
I mean, the games we wouldn't consider, like, girls, a lot of girls playing Candy Crush or whatever.
Right, I was
going
to say, like,
easy
to get into, like, very fast kind of modular games.
Yeah.
Like my girlfriend is not a video gamer by any means, but, like, she started playing some game where she... It's Candy Crush, but with soap.
Yeah.
I don't know what
Well, there's
it is,
also World
of
Warcraft. Soap.
That's what she says. Like, I ask her what she's doing on her phone, and she's like, I'm sitting here making soap. Like, what's someone do?
For MMOs, I'm pretty sure, like, there's a large female population out there who is into that. But anyway, I just brought up that point to say this. Like, you know, the gaming industry and the gaming... I don't want to say the mentality, but several... it's a testament to how big it's gotten in modern day culture when you see like terminology and for lack of a better term, ideas being thrown back and forth between the between modern day everyday life and the gaming industry itself. And like you have big name action stars starring in video games like Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard. Who would have thought that he would have actually done something like this? I mean, back then, it is the PS1, the best you would have with Bruce Willis.
I'm shocked that you get guys like Kevin Spacey and like.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey's been
there. That's a huge one.
Yeah.
What was Bruce Willis in?
I don't remember. He did the voiceover for some game. I think it was a Die Hard for PlayStation 1. But I remember back in the day where like.
I would think it would be like Command and Conquer.
He's like
does the narration for Command and Conquer or something like
well,
that.
Well, back then, like during 1994, I'm not sure if you guys ever heard of a video game called Wing Commander.
Yeah.
And they were just starting to put in voice acting and motion picture capturing for characters then. They had Mark Hamill play Christopher Blair, the main character of the Wing Commander series. And like Mark Hamill was, I wouldn't say he's a super big name, but he was definitely popular enough to get into the industry. And now
he's one of the kings of voice acting.
He's one of the kings of voice acting, yeah. But
he's the Joker.
He was actually in the game itself as a live action character.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And nowadays it's getting more and more popular. I'm like, yeah, Robert Carlyle. You have I'm using all the characters from Lords of Shadow 2, of course, but
yeah, Kevin Spacey.
Yeah,
you've got
yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland. You've got. I mean, there's a whole bunch. Wait, did you just an aside?
Jack Bauer as Big Boss.
Did you ever see the Wing Commander movie?
I refuse to see the Wing Commander movie.
Oh, I mean,
what was the Wing Commander movie?
They made a movie back in like 90, was it 97?
I heard it was
so
horrible. I refuse.
I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't. I mean, in the pantheon, we have to do a separate cast one day on just video games that have been adapted to film. But in the pantheon of video games that have been adapted to films, it's not bad. It's not terrible, but it's not bad.
Is it what has there been that's been good?
The best video game adaptation? I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't think I really hesitate to say that there's even been one that's good. I mean, like it one series I think is at the very least okay. Maybe is Resident Evil, but it's not a good move by any means.
All it is
a bunch of people just running around shooting.
The second one was the as closest as it got to being good adaptation.
Really?
Yeah.
I
Resident Evil Apocalypse was the second one that was the best, I think.
I watched the Hitman movie.
That wasn't that great.
I was okay with it. Mainly because the first one had Timothy Oliphant in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that dude, I'll just watch him fucking do anything.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's fucking great in everything I've seen him in. So, like, watching that dude, like, if they videotaped him folding laundry for like 2.5 hours, I'd be like, I'm in. Like, do it. Cool. Take my money. Like, yeah. So like, to me, that movie was pretty watchable and it was pretty enjoyable. But
did you guys ever see the? I'm trying to think. The paragon of bad video game movie is either Super Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers.
Or Alone.
Double Dragon.
Or Alone in the Dark.
Fighter. Oh no!
You guys see Alone in the Dark?
No.
Yeah, that had Tara Reid. As playing an anthropologist.
Oh, because that's believable. Because
that's
a woman of science.
Yes. A knowledgeable woman of science. Christian Slater.
Oh, okay.
The Street Fighter.
It was a what?
Street Fighter.
Oh, dude, but that had Raul Julia in it.
And that
was so bad it was
still
good.
Haven't seen it.
That
and,
was so bad it was
seen.
Good.
And Van Damme's speech.
Oh, man.
Van Damme's speech is pretty dope. It's a Van Damme movie.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not setting the bar super high on that, so I only get a pass from it.
Because there's the video game adaptations that are bad, and there's
right.
the ones that are so bad they're good, like
right.
Mortal Kombat.
Right, yeah.
Like, I mean,
the first Mortal
the
Kombat
first
was,
one was pretty good.
Yeah,
it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
Annihilation was
pretty
yeah.
bad.
Yeah, it was not.
The thing is, like, I think since we're going back to the idea of translating movies to video game, I'm sorry, video games to movies. I think that direction doesn't quite work. It's much easier to translate movies to video games because video games.
But how many good adaptations from movies to video games do you know? Usually they turn out kind of crappy.
Okay, well actually, maybe I should rephrase that. Taking a story, and adapting it to either format, you can take good voice acting, you can take a good story, and you can put it into a video game and really for lack of a better term, milk it for what it's worth. You can put like stats, you can develop your own heroes, you can have good voice acting to put the story along, and you can really draw it out to tell a great story.
I should retract that. There are good adaptations. I mean,
Mad Max was a pretty good game.
Lord of the Rings and Star Wars have multiple iterations of games that are so I need to retract that statement. That was just reactionary. But one adaptation I thought was decent was the first Silent Hill movie. It wasn't like in keeping very well with the intellectual mindfuck of Silent Hill, but as far as like the atmosphere and the makeup and the costuming and the
acting,
it was good.
I honestly give a movie's based on video games a long time ago. I think the majority of them aren't really good. I mean, I remember seeing Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within, and that was terrible.
That was
and
not that
they tried. They even made a movie.
That was bankrupted Square Enix.
I think they tried. They tried to make a movie called Advent Children, and that was.
Oh yeah, that was the
Final Fantasy
VII. Yeah,
yeah. That was visually pleasing, but it lacked any substance or feeling whatsoever. And I thought I had
a little bit of a heart in it.
It had a little bit, but like it wasn't substantial.
But the thing, in
order to really appreciate it, you had to have played through Final Fantasy VII. You really had to get into the minds of the characters in order for the movie to work. And if you hadn't, then
it was lost. But
yeah,
it wasn't made for anybody.
Yeah, like if you're not a Final Fantasy VII fan, you're never going to watch that movie.
Exactly. So I mean, they weren't really trying to cover those bases that you just mentioned.
It wasn't exactly a four quad. It wasn't an Avengers.
No,
no, it was not.
But what you were saying about, with Final Fantasy VII, I mean, everybody's got rose-colored glasses when it comes to that game. It's hard to kind of detach it from its legacy. But
I have no rose-colored glasses. That game is bullshit, man.
But I mean, adapting a game to a film do you take out the interactivity, and then if you can, I mean, it's like a game functions well not only because of the storyline, but because how you interact that story, right?
Adapting a game to a movie is kind of like adapting a book to a movie. With a book, you have pages, you have room to put in a lot of content. Whenever you're creating a movie, you have to fit a certain amount of content into, depending on the amount of creative license, depending on what you're allocated. You have a limited amount of time in order to cram a certain number of things in. What makes a
story?
A lot of people consider the book version of whatever kind of media they put out there to be superior, because you have the opportunity to really flesh that out. And I see a video game is it's another medium to tell stories, and it's similar to a book in that you can use it to really flesh things out. You have the ability to expand on someone's character. You can put in so much content to make the game enjoyable. You can't do that in a movie because it's
in a book and a video game, you can take the time to do inner monologue, and no one gets mad at you in a book for describing a setting for a few pages or whatever, right?
I do. I'm like, come on, George R. R. Martin, get over it.
But in a movie, you've got 90 minutes to 2 hours, and you got to get everything on there, and then you sacrifice a lot.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so you have to reduce the book or the video game to plot point elements, and then move from plot A to point B, and while not losing that the significance and impact of that path.
Well,
that's going to be difficult.
Going along those lines right now, it's this past week, I think they just released the Shannara Chronicles.
Yeah, on MTV.
Yeah.
What is that?
Go ahead.
It's a book series that MTV is adapting into. It's very Lord of the Rings-ish.
Oh, right.
Elves and humans and druids and magic.
All right.
And they released the first episode this week. And it's empty. It's very MTV. Like, it's very a lot of pretty people.
Like pretty people. It's not, I don't have a bias against pretty people. It's just
it's not terribly done. I watched some of the first episode. I haven't recorded. I haven't finished all of it.
Okay.
But it looks pretty. It looks passable.
It's decent.
It's passable.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to give something a few episodes to find itself. You know.
Right.
I've seen all three of the episodes, and I'm enjoying the show. I think it definitely has its share of in my opinion, flaws. But then again, I haven't read the books. And what I'm really interested in is I'm in a personal reading binge right now, but mostly reading nonfiction as opposed to fiction. But I want to get I've been interested in the Shannara Chronicles for some time because I hear it's a fairly decent story. And what I'm really curious about is after having seen these first three episodes, how faithful is it to the storytelling in the books themselves? Like I find myself wondering as I watch through some of these episodes. Like, yeah, very nice special effects, decent acting, Martin Bennett inside it. He played Deathstroke and Arrow, and I think he's phenomenal. But how well does he? How well does the visual translation translate into the actual storytelling? You know, what's really sacrificed for good storytelling as opposed to something that's visually pleasing? And I think it might be interesting to go back and read the books and see if it is indeed superior.
Well, that's your homework, man.
Yeah,
come back and let us know.
Yeah.
One of the shows I was watching this week, and I've been watching the past couple weeks, is called The Expanse, which is on Sci-Fi.
What the fuck is this? This sounds
good.
Fascinating.
It's good.
I like the name of it, at least.
The Expanse. So it's like a couple hundred years in the future, and human beings have colonized the solar system. So there's like a very kind of militant, advanced technological society that's grown up on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And then Earth has kind of like become... I mean, they're technologically advanced, but they're kind of, like, decadent. And then there's the Belters.
So it's like Dune, kind of?
Like Dune? Oh, not...
Not Dune. Dune. Dune.
Oh, Dune.
Yeah.
Oh, not that far future.
Okay.
No, this is just a couple hundred years. Like, Dune is, like, 10,000 years.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the decadence of it and, like, the...
So, like, the Earth... I mean, they basically... Earth is, like, the rich plantation owners, and then they have, like, slaves, but, like, basically wage slaves.
Mm, like indentured servants.
Yeah, out in the asteroid belt, and out in the, like, the Jovian moons, like,
mm-hmm.
mining ice and minerals and stuff to bring back to Earth.
Okay.
So there's, like, generations of people that have grown up on these low-gravity stations, so they have, like, biological differences. Since they grew up in low gravity, they get really tall,
mm.
but their bones are weak. So they can't really go on to planets very well.
Okay.
They don't transition well onto planets because their muscles are weak.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really like a kind of a nice science aspect to it. Like they're like taking into consideration like the real practicalities of long term
right, like exposure
to space. And so Mars is kind of like declared independence from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so Earth has the United Nations governs Earth, and then they have like a moon colony, which is part of Earth, and then like the asteroid belt is basically like trying to fight for independence, but because they get treated like shit.
Okay.
Because they're basically an exploitive wage class that,
right.
that Earth uses to fuel its decadence.
Right.
And then Mars has become like Sparta.
Oh, okay.
Mars,
like
Mars
planet.
Is basically Sparta, and Athens, and Earth is basically a decadent Athens.
Okay.
So it's kind of that's kind of the setup. And so
is
then,
it kind of badass? Like, is
it's
there
pretty
fighting?
Badass. It's, yeah, there's fighting. There's ships fighting.
Oh.
So
check this out.
It kind of switches between different vignettes that are going on, but they're all related.
Right.
So like there's like a worker uprising in the asteroid belt, and Ceres is like a real asteroid, like a big chunk, huge asteroid, like the biggest one in the asteroid belt.
Mm-hmm.
So their main base is there. So like it goes flashes from Ceres, and there's like a police officer there who is an Earth guy who was raised on Ceres, so he's kind of like straddling both worlds,
right.
kind of
a man lost between
yeah.
two worlds.
And so he's trying to figure out how to keep the rebellion in check, but still be sympathetic.
Mm.
And then there's this Indian woman who is on Earth, who's like one of the leaders of the UN,
okay.
and she's trying to like keep shit like on the level with Mars. This is really weird because we have a person named Mars here.
Right.
And then Mars is like researching like super advanced technology, and they have all like this secret military shit going on. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff going on out like in Saturn and Jupiter, like with the moons. Like they're still like trying to colonize out there and get mining rights to all those moons and stuff like that. So there's a whole bunch of freighter and like ship traffic that goes back and forth between the outer solar system and the inner solar system. And so there's been these, like, conflicts, and there's, like, this mysterious other sect out there that's been attacking, trying to instigate a war between Earth and Mars.
Oh,
and
like
we don't
a
know
secret
who it
society
is.
That's...
Yeah, they don't know who it
Illuminati
is.
Illuminati type of thing?
Well, I mean, like, Illuminati, like, not, like, religious, but
right.
There's some sort of political faction that they don't know what's going on. It's attacking...
Like shadow government type
yeah.
of stuff.
And so, and they have, like, this secret stealth technology. They don't know where it came from.
Mm.
So that's kind of, like, the hook. And then there's this missing person that plays an important role in all three kind of
right,
sections.
Right, that's going to... They're all collide.
And so they're all trying to figure out where the hell she is, and that's kind of
yeah.
the link.
Okay.
And so there's an interesting, like, renegade crew that's been framed for destroying a Mars ship.
Mm.
And so now they're on the run. So it's a really good... It's really interesting.
Okay.
It's pretty good. And, like, very interesting visual effects as far as, like, what our current technology might evolve into.
Oh.
So...
This is pretty interesting because, you know, I haven't seen the series for myself, though. I hear it's very good, Bobby. And what I'm hearing in the series is that... You know how Star Trek was the preeminent science fiction show back in the 1960s? And they used it as a means of social satire
mm-hmm.
To address some of the issues that was going on in that time period. And
This is definitely doing that.
Yeah, and you described that whole setting you described. It sounds like it's a way to address... You know, one of the things that I think they're talking about that I think that they're definitely getting into. I haven't seen the series for myself again, but it sounds like they'll be addressing like bigotry.
Yeah,
Well,
it's interesting because these are timeless things. Like as far as the haves and the have-nots and conflicting
classism in general,
yeah.
Classism, religious ideology conflicts. But then, like you have these terrorist cells
ugh.
That are attacking, right? So of course that's very relevant. You've got conflicting ideologies and politics that are very much mirroring what's going on in American politics today.
Well,
you've got kind of a faceless, no-name secret organization that is attempting to instigate conflict between two massive powers.
I'll have to check the series out
yeah.
because it's these are subjects that are really, really interesting to me. But at the same time, I think it, you know, not to take too much of a spin off this, but it's also kind of depressing because it's like, oh, come on. Like, you know, going back to the subject of Star Trek, it really pointed to an optimistic future. I think that was Gene Roddenberry's role in creating this series. But you know, sometimes I get a little depressed, like thinking about some of this stuff because we're still talking about this in the 21st century. I'm like, how far have we really come, actually? And it's like,
I think we've come pretty far. I mean,
comparatively,
in the 60s, in the 60s, they were still fire hosing black
well,
people.
Well, I argue that like in some ways we've come far in terms of laws that we've created, but like in terms of how people think and whatnot. I mean. Like for example, like the 60s, it was all about racial integration. And nowadays, and hopefully we're moving past it now. It's about like it's about gay rights. But here's the thing.
Gay rights too, but I still racial integration.
Right. But like what I'm arguing is that what I think about like when I ask the question, how far have we really come? I mean, like. You know, thankfully, like people are more accepting of gays today, and I'm very very grateful for that. But in my opinion, like just to throw out a random example, I think sometime in the future, I'll call it something theoretical from here on out. Like artificial intelligence. I think inevitably, sometime in the future, we're gonna come up with a machine. And
that's gay. Oh my god, that's genius.
Well,
and then it'll be allowed to marry another gay machine. Something with a coaxial of some sort. A coaxial. Two things with two coaxials can be married to each other.
That's not what I'm saying. Sometime in the future, we'll probably come up with some kind of artificial intelligence, like, say, Data from Star Trek Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not inconceivable that this machine might take out some very very human characteristics and may have the ability to experience emotion as we do, and I guarantee you in 20 or 30 and maybe not 20 or 30 years, but in the same future we'll be back to the exact same place we are today, and we'll be arguing with religious politics about like should a machine be allowed to marry a quote unquote real living human being, and like and I think about that and I wonder Have we really come all that far?
That sounds like
our shows. I don't know.
That sounds like
the
end of Battlestar Galactica. Remember where they're like, oh, we've all done this all before, and we'll all do it again.
Well, yeah, but
the robots.
But I think that's a very, very valid question. I mean, because have we really come out all that far? We created new laws and recognize things more and more slowly. But like when you look back at it, I think it's kind of the same thing. And I wonder, do people really think any differently? I don't think so.
I think so. Yeah. I think you're being really pessimistic.
I mean, it was a big deal that Kennedy was a Catholic back in the day. And so it's like, to even to that point, like in the 60s, like black people were very much oppressed in this country. Catholicism was something that was like a taboo almost. Like, I mean, to come to the point where like, okay, now like two dudes can get married, two women can get married. Like, it's...
What you can do and show and be and in media and to society has improved a great deal.
I would actually say it's almost too far the other way.
And I agree. And I agree with that. But like, when it comes down to it, I ask myself, fundamentally, I kind of sort of think we're asking the same questions, just in slightly different forms. And that's what I find is kind of depressing. Maybe I am being pessimistic, but I think like...
But that's what humans are. Like,
yeah,
that's all we've ever done. Like, the only difference now is that it's like, okay, the color of your skin or like your sexual orientation versus like, you know, a long time ago, it was like, what tribe are you from?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then it was segregated.
Which god do you believe?
Right.
Yeah.
Which of our many demon gods do you believe?
Yeah.
Like, all of that stuff. So it's always just, it's, human nature always comes down to us versus the other. Like, that's always what it is. And there will always be another, because...
We'll just find a new way to be different.
And the way that the human mind works is, we can only remember things because we separate them and classify them. Like, we remember certain things about, like, the way we classify people, even. The way you know one person from the other, whether we want to admit it or not, is a big portion is like, okay, their skin color. What types of characteristics do they have? You break it down in your mind. Like, this is a white person.
Mm-hmm.
They happen to be gay. They are a male or a female. Like, you always classify things. And so, because that's the way our minds work, we will always look for something that is outside of our comfort or outside of the norm that will define that person.
And that's one of the projects of science fiction is to examine those boundaries. I don't know if you ever read Octavia Butler, but she is a really famous science fiction author who talked about ideas of race and gender in exactly these terms, and like looking for the other, and looking at like the basic ridiculousness of like, well, we solve the black versus white, right?
Right.
And so then, you know, it'll just be something else along like somewhere down the line. There'll just be some other thing that rises that comes up, and it's going to be just as severe a problem and just the same level as ridiculousness.
I agree.
Episode of the original Star Trek where they had the war of the planet of people with the half black face and half white face, and they were at war because the other half of the face was white.
Right.
So like the right side of the face is black and the left side was white, and they were at war with people that had the opposites. And it's like,
right,
it doesn't matter. You're like, you said, it's a really good point. There's always going to be some type of otherness, and once you solve that, you'll find something else.
Right, and then there are people like us who are looking at them like, both of you guys are fucked up. You both have half a face. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys?
Or as we start becoming more technologically and advanced, we'll create more differences.
Right.
So now we're creating, you know, transgender
and
stuff like that. And so now we're creating more differences and then getting upset about that.
And like, you know, the question is getting more and more fine-tuned. I just find it kind of depressing that, you know, in our sci-fi shows that we're still kind of sort of addressing the same issues. We're like,
are the issues that still affect us. Those are still things we care about.
Yeah, and like my whole point is, it's like, you know, I think it's just kind of unfortunate because I think like, you know, I mean, come on, we've seen discrimination take many forms. Like, why can't we as a species in our sci-fi shows as a reflection of the modern day? Why haven't we taken that model of thought and try to apply it to circumstances today? I mean, like,
But I think we do, like, because those are the circumstances of today, are the same problems that we've dealt with. They're in different forms.
Like, what would be a sci-fi show that you would want to see, like, address that problem? Like, so what problem would you want to see addressed by a sci-fi show, and, like,
I think that's a very, very interesting question, because I remember reading some articles about Gene Roddenberry in which... He had a very, very optimistic view of the future, and I think some of the directors, when they were making the Next Generation, they had a hard time making good scripts because he kept saying, in the 24th century, they don't think like that anymore. In the 21st century, they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So they really had to...
He didn't say win in the 21st century, though. I mean,
24th century, I'm sorry. It's far in the future. And like, he had a very, very optimistic view of the future. And like, it's a view that I certainly subscribe to. But the thing is, like,
there was no conflict.
Yeah, without conflict, you don't make good shows.
No.
That's why Star Trek's fucking boring.
It's not boring.
It's
good.
Fucking boring.
There is good Star Trek.
No, you know the best Star Trek? Yeah, J.J. Abrams. when J.J. Abrams made Star Trek into Star Wars, yeah, it became good. Other than that, it was pretty fucking boring.
No, watch the Dominion War in DS9. That's not boring. That's people doing messed up shit.
I think
Quark was the best part of fucking DS9.
Yeah, because he was the most unscrupulous.
Yeah.
See, now we're getting at it. It's like, what's interesting? People that have these worldviews that are examining those dichotomies that we talked about,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I will definitely agree. When Gene Roddenberry was at the helm and like taking creative direction, a lot of the episodes were kind of boring. Case in point, when they came back and made Star Trek the motion picture, the first Star Trek movie,
that movie was fucking boring.
Visually stunning, but one of the most boring films that
ever
watched.
It was incredibly boring. And, now I can't verify this, but Star Trek II, which is arguably the best movie out of the entire series, take what I say with a grain of salt, but I don't think he actually liked the direction it took.
No, he didn't. You know why?
It was an action movie.
It was an action movie, but it was like, okay, it's about vengeance, it's about pettiness, it's about anger and passion, and these are things that Gene Roddenberry said, like, oh, we've moved past all that pettiness.
Yeah, and
but then
there are several aspects of the movie that he disagreed with, because you'll notice between the first and the second movies, there was a different change in their uniforms. Like Star Trek II, they introduced that maroon colored suit that looked more militaristic as opposed to what they came up with.
Well, that's because it was
yeah.
the 70s when Star Trek motion picture came out, and like pastel jumpsuits were like
yeah.
disgusting.
Well, that's true, but like the fact of the matter is, I think he didn't like it because he didn't view Starfleet as a military organization. He looked at it as more as an exploratory branch, and Star Trek II took it in a very, very action oriented direction. And while it was arguably, I think it was a good movie. There was good storytelling. There was good drama behind it. There was a very, very important theme being explored about, you know, it all centered around Kirk, about how, about themes of cheating death, about facing death, and like, he had to deal with the death of his best friend, the creation of a new world, he had to deal with vengeance, with so many various themes in the movie, and it was arguably a good story, but I don't think it was told, and I don't think it was necessarily told in a vein that Gene Roddenberry would have appreciated, because he had a very, very, again, optimistic utopian view of the future, and I think part two kind of it really didn't vibe with that particular view.
I don't know even
with the Dominion War, because I think fans nowadays they disagree with having that war as a part of the storyline of Deep Space Nine.
Well, you gotta look at what makes, like, okay, so idealism, like, okay, so Gene Roddenberry was an idealist, had great
yes,
ideas.
Yes.
And I love Star Trek. It's a part of me, and I'm not cracking on his legacy by any means.
No, of course not.
But you gotta look at what having high ideals is versus what good storytelling and interesting storytelling is. Because at the end
yes.
of the day, we are not ideal people. None of us are. We are flawed, and we take enjoyment out of watching conflict and drama arise out of characters that we can sympathize with who are flawed. So we go in, and you have, you know, some of the stories in, you know, like to just take the motion picture again, like, no one in that movie was really, I mean, Kirk was dealing with handing off the command to someone else of the Enterprise, but mainly it was like exploring and facing the unknown, right?
The best episode I think that ever explored any of those themes was Star Trek Deep Space Nine's In the Pale Moonlight. That episode was fantastic.
Well, I mean, so that's what I'm saying is, I mean, I think we're arguing around what makes good idealism versus what makes a good episode of Star Trek or an episode or a movie. Like,
I mean, it sounds like Gene Roddenberry's whole thing is that he takes the human element out of the human.
That's what you need. Like, in order for us to relate to it, to be interesting and good, it has
you
to
need
have
a human element.
Yeah,
well, that's why like he had characters like Spock and Data. Because Spock was being a pure logic, and he was a way to bounce ideas off of. To he would say, "This is illogical. That is illogical." And it would really force you to take a look at the humans on the show, to really take a look at their own actions. And same with Data, where, like I think in First Contact, where Picard reached out to touch the hull of the Phoenix, and he gave Data an explanation. Says that touching something like this makes it feel more real in the moment. And Data just touched it, and he gave like a really scientific explanation about why what he was detecting, and it wasn't. It forced. He was a mirror bounce off to really take a look at. It was a way for people to take a look at the show and to explore the themes of what does it mean to be human? Why do we think this way? Why do we feel this way? What?
And that's what it should be.
Yeah.
That's where the idealism should be birthed and how it should look forward.
Sure.
That's
sure.
where it should come from. Like. I don't know if you remember the first episode of Star Trek Next Generation.
Encounter at Farpoint.
Encounter at Farpoint with Q. And at the very, was it Encounter at Farpoint or was it All Good Things? I can't remember if it was the first or the last episode. Oh, crap. Oh, my God. I'm like the worst Star Trek fan right now. Q says something to Picard. He says... he's like the true adventure is not out here amongst the stars, but it's in the uncharted possibilities
of
existence
of
how you exist as
okay.
a being, right? So that always kind of stuck with me because it's not about Star Trek. It's all that stuff is cool, all the tech stuff is cool, all the science is cool, pushing the boundaries, wondering what we can do. But in the end, it's like, what kind of people are we, and what kind of people can we be?
I feel like a better sci-fi show out of all of that is that no matter how far you come, can you escape your own humanity and your own, like, failings as a human?
Yeah.
Of, like, you know, vengeance is a part of humanity. Like wrath is a part of humanity.
And that's the opposite. That's kind of the opposite viewpoint Gene Roddenberry has. That's
right.
Like looking at his stuff in the mirror. And the good replica of that is Battlestar Galactica.
Mm.
Because then they're running away from their past and they can't escape it.
Right.
And follow. I mean, the Cylons very metaphorically are their demons pursuing them.
I really like that analogy, Bobby, because one of the things I've told some of my friends who haven't seen the show is that, and let me know if you disagree with me here, but like I absolutely loved Edward James Olmos's portrayal of Adama, and here we have a character who's essentially a man of honor. He's definitely flawed. He definitely has his issues as being an imperfect father. He has his own biases, yada yada yada. But he's portrayed by and large throughout the show as being essentially a man of honor. Because Battlestar Galactica has a much more pessimistic view of the future than Star Trek does. But I kind of view Adama, as he's portrayed by Edward James Olmos, as being a dark version of Picard. From Star Trek: The Next Generation, is
like literally, because he's the pigment of the skin. That's
no,
racist.
No, 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 no.
See, that's very not Gene Roddenberry. You're looking at race there.
A dark version in terms of saying, like, Picard is very, very cultured. He's very cosmopolitan. He's very, very idealistic. And Adama is in a lot of ways, I think, very, very similar. Like throughout the series, he's touted as being a man of honor, and you see his actions, that are. That reinforced that, but you also see how he's very, very flawed as a human being. Like when they were putting Gaius Baltar on trial in the third season, he was incredibly biased towards, I think, biased against giving him a fair trial, and like against his son defending him. But his son in the end really shows him in the end how it's become a case of mob justice, and Adama really realizes how he's wrong and goes in that direction. So it's kind of like that's why I say he's a very, very dark version of Picard. Because although he is a very he is a man of honor, he also shows he has fatal flaws, but eventually is able to move in the direction of honor rather than then towards a base nature, which is
that episode where they like that last episode of season 3 where they're on trial. I think one of the best episodes for any science fiction television show ever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's when it peaked. Season 4 kind of shit itself.
Edward James Olmos was just awesome in that role.
Was
he was phenomenal in that role.
But I'm thinking that, you know, as a like everybody in that show, Battlestar, they had like a crutch. There was like a debilitating, fatal flaw to them. In Star Trek, I mean, they have quirks. It's not like a debilitating flaw. Like, Geordi can't hook up with chicks. Oh, well. Like, it's not going to destroy you.
You're blind. That's a much bigger deal to me.
but see, that's the cool thing about Geordi. That never, like, was an issue. And technically, he could see better than most everybody else. Like, he couldn't see, like, normal spectrum, but he had the visor. He could
see,
like,
that's part of the problem, is, like, he didn't use that as part of, like, his thing, his game to pick up girls. He should have been, like, taking his visor off and been like, oh, I can't see. You feel sorry for me.
Let me touch your face.
Let me touch your boobs. I need proportion.
With Star Trek, they put up the best portions of people, and they put up individual, and in order to give the characters depth, they put up their individual quirks.
Yeah.
With Battlestar, they
showed the worst.
They showed people with, they still showed arguably good people, but they also showed them as people being fatally flawed. Like, Adama had a very, very narrow, like, in the first episode, he said a man isn't a man unless he wears the wings of a viper pilot, which kind of shows a kind of narrow, a very, very narrow mindset.
He went from being very, like, very conservative and almost fascist, in a way, with, like military fascism, like, to a more inclusive, accepting role, and that was largely because of the president.
Yeah, like, not knowing these shows very well and just, like, hearing you guys talk about them, I would say that Battlestar Galactica is a much more representative of a realistic version of human nature.
Both in human and in actual, like, technology and spaceflight.
Yeah, see, like, to me, like, all of the characters that you're describing, like, I am much more likely to believe in someone's, like, going to have a fatal flaw than they are the best version of themselves.
Yeah,
so like, to me, that's a
Shakespearean flaw.
Well, it makes it realistic, then. Like, that's why, then.
But you go on those journeys for different reasons. I didn't watch Battlestar to be uplifted. I watched it to, like, understand myself. I watched Star Trek to be uplifted. Like, you don't go through, like, I'll give you an example. Like, if you watch 3 seasons of Star Trek Next Generation, you don't, like, have, like, a couple of episodes where you, like, love Worf, and then you absolutely hate Worf, and then you love Worf again, and then you don't know how to feel about
Worf.
It's just Worf.
Yes.
Worf's always Worf, and, like, he does stuff, and you're like, oh, like, you know, he's Worf, and then, like when he has to defend his family's honor against the treachery of the Romulans, the Planet of Fire, then you're like, oh, this sucks, but Worf's gonna make it through, and then...
God, you said Worf so much, it's like, the word is losing all meaning to me.
And then he comes out on top, and you're like, yeah, awesome, like, way to go. But then, there are times in Battlestar Galactica, like, I liked the Chief, what was his name, Tyrell?
Tyrell,
like, first couple episodes, like, a couple seasons, like, great, and then all of a sudden... Couldn't stand his ass. Hated him. He was being a dick. He was being a douchebag. Was, you know.
But that was a result
and
of
then,
like the character.
But everybody was like, it was like a yo-yo.
Even Adama was like that.
Adama was like that. The president. Everybody, like, you didn't know week to week if you were gonna, like, love them or hate them. Like,
but is that a result of, like, that's a result of good writing, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it was really well.
It was excellent well writing. And, like, going back to your point, Stephen, it's that's how people really, like, in my opinion, that's how people really are in real life. For example, like, going back to the Battlestar example, like, you have people who, on main characters of the show who are arguably fundamentally good, but they have serious flaws. Like, take Starbuck, Katie Sackhoff's character was an example. She had a definite sense of honor. She cared about the people around her, but she was self-destructive. She would get drunk. She would just hook up with random people. She would just do some really
stupid
stuff.
Dude, she sounds fucking awesome.
Starbuck's really cool.
But at the end of the day, she had a real sense of humanity around her. But, like, out of any other character on the show, she really, really highlighted her fatal flaws. And that's how people really are.
Mm. Not all the time. I don't highlight my fatal flaws every day.
I would say I highlight mine on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, but going back to it, I think that's the point of really good sci-fi, not necessarily fantasy, but sci-fi. It's a way to really, really shine a light into society's ills and have people really have a fun and, dare I say, safe way to ask the tough questions. You know,
I don't think good sci-fi should be safe. I think it should piss people off.
Like Star Trek 4? That, which, by the way, is way better than Star Trek 2. Like,
The whales?
Yeah, whales are the double dumbass on you. Like, the greatest line in all of Star Trek. Like, that was easily the best Star Trek movie.
I like that as well.
Yeah.
Speaking of Star Trek, I wanted to bring up something that happened this week. Most recent 2 weeks. Paramount, who owns the rights to Star Trek movies, is suing the production of a fan film called Prelude to Axanar. They've been doing fan films for both Star Wars and Star Trek forever. I mean, they'll put it up on YouTube or,
it's ridiculous.
Here's the thing is, like, CBS owns the rights to the television show. Paramount owns the movie rights. So there are episodes, they have seasons, like actual full seasons of fan shows up on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But now Prelude to Axanar is a full-length feature film, like 2.5 hours or so. They posted the first half hour of it, I think. It kickstarted like $2 million, something like that.
Wow.
Like, fans really wanted this film to get made.
It was good. It was good.
And it's got, like, actual stars from the show in it. And really? there have been other Star Trek productions. Star Trek Renegades had Tim Russ, the guy who played Tuvok in... Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov.
Just out of curiosity, did they ever have Data on any of this stuff?
I don't think so. Actually, Data's... Brent Spiner actually started his own web show called Fresh Hell, and he guest stars on Patrick Stewart's new joint, Blunt Talk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he on there a lot?
He's been on several episodes.
Okay. I still have to watch that.
That show's
hilarious.
I can't watch that show.
The show is freaking hilarious.
I don't want my... The car destroyed.
Whoa, we just had a pop there at that.
The most unrealistic part about Star Trek to me, especially the Next Generation, is that Data is a male.
What's wrong with Data being a male?
Okay, but there's nothing wrong with it, per se. But in the future, with males presumably creating androids, is there any way that a male who is creating an android isn't going to create some sort of fuckbot?
I guess.
Or force Data to take off his penis part, his Mr. Potato Head penis part, and put on his Mr. Potato Head vagina part.
That's another sense of Star Trek... like overestimating us, being the best of humanity, right?
That we wouldn't fuck our
because if they built Cylons, I mean, what is the first thing that Baltar does to Cylon?
He fucks it.
Yeah,
I have never even watched the show, but I
know
that he's gonna fuck this.
That's the main thing that they do with the Cylons is like as soon as they can build them or they come back and they're built like human beings,
mm-hmm.
they're all fucking.
Yeah,
they're all fucking.
That, and that makes sense, because that's what people would do.
Well, we're looking at, like, Star Trek being... We were talking earlier about Star Trek being a very, very optimistic view of the future, and that'll start kind of, like, devolving to some, like, more, let's say, baser parts of human nature. I think when Star Trek went up, they decided to go that route, because, just to give a more elevated view of humanity,
But we're not elevated. We're animals.
Yeah.
Like,
if you compare us, say, okay, so we live in the 21st century now. If you compare our behaviors to how we behaved in the 15th century, there's a marked difference. And how much differently are we going to behave 300 years in the future with people who,
resemble humanity. Mm-hmm. Now we're our technology and biology is accelerating so fast. I mean, we may be completely different beings by then.
That's true.
True. Very true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to get your guys' opinion on this Paramount situation, because,
fuck those guys.
Well, they do own the rights to it, right? So that would be like, say, like, HBO, it's like someone started making, like, Game of Thrones TV shows, right?
Yeah.
And, like, Game of Thrones, like, okay, well, you can do, like, little fan clips over, but then
they got some serious money behind making like a Game of Thrones offshoot show.
But why wouldn't they? Why did they not just release it in half hour chunks where they hadn't been harassed before?
I'm pretty sure that they could have, but for some reason Paramount decided that was it.
Here's the thing: it's very Prelude to Axanar was an excellent web series. They had previous Trek actors on there, like Tony Todd, who played Kern.
Yeah.
I think he plays Admiral Ramirez in Prelude to Axanar. And they had other big name stars on there as well. I think like the guy who plays Colonel Ty in Battlestar Galactica is playing Captain Robert April, the first captain of the Enterprise, in an official Axanar movie. And this, what I find very, very interesting is that it's so popular and it's been out there for such a long time that if they wanted to bring out a lawsuit, if they wanted to take any kind of legal action, don't you think a few years ago would have been the time to do it? Now, recently, within the past few months, they've announced in 2017 that they're going to release a new Star Trek show. So this seems kind of very, very fortuitous to me.
Maybe they want to clean the slate off before
they
start doing TV shows.
They want to clean out. They want to clean out whatever's the competition out there.
Because they had shows up on YouTube when they released 2009 Star Trek, and they didn't say shit back then.
Yeah, they didn't say anything out there. And they know that J.J. Abrams is out there making new Star Trek movies. They know there's other content going on out there. They know that there's other web series going on out there. So why take an effort to why make the effort to sue a completely independent fan film in the light that they're making a new series out there, and like from Prelude to Axanar, it was very, very well done. I'm very excited to see the finished product of this. And so
I think what's going on is that. This is the first one that got some serious money behind it. It's coming out at a time. They're going to release Star Trek Beyond soon. They don't have a solid release date yet. And then they're going to have a new show come up. I think they were concerned that because it was such a big production that they were going to be... They don't want people making money off of it. That's the thing.
Well, I was about to say, like, if they got an influx of loot, then, like, people don't care if you're not making money.
Yeah.
But if suddenly you start making money off someone else's project, then, like, yeah, that becomes kind of a big deal. Like, to play devil's advocate, I understand that part of it. Like, that'd be fucked up.
I'm wondering if somehow Paramount found out, like, maybe there was somebody making some money off of it finally. Maybe someone...
Well, I mean, they got $2 million, so that's obviously going to, like, pay after salary. I mean, even the people who are making this content, they're going to post themselves as a director. So they're going to take a director's fee. You know, like, writers are going to take a writing fee. So even though they were doing it for free for a long time, or like doing it on a very low budget where it wasn't worth going after them, now they're getting $2 million. Like,
yeah,
it's
that's more than a lot of independent films get to be made. You know,
I don't like that they're doing it, but I can understand why they were doing it because
and that's basically the same conclusion. I could be like, I'm not a fan of their action, but I understand because in the end of the day, it is their intellectual property.
Right.
I mean, what's his name? Roddenberry's son. Oh, what is his name? Rod Roddenberry. He weighed in saying, like, you know, I don't own the rights to it. It's not like my father, you know, sold that off to, you know, Paramount and CBS whenever they have it. He's like, I'm not thrilled with that, but he's like, I understand. Like, if I own the property rights or the intellectual property rights and someone was making money off of that, what I own, then of course I would go out there. But I mean, maybe they could have done it a better way instead of like maybe sending like a cease and desist letter or something like that instead.
We don't know. Maybe they did. And
maybe they did.
They just
we
said,
know.
Fuck them. We got $2 million. Like, the worst that happens is they come and try to take it from us. And
yeah.
I mean, more than likely, what it does is it stops other fan projects from being made. Like, that's because they're not going to get the $2 million that was raised for that project.
No, they're not going to. Yeah.
So all that's going to end up happening is it sends a message that if you try to create something, we're going to come after it. If you try to create something and make substantial money off of it, we're going to come after you.
The only other thing is I'm thinking, like, maybe they saw the potential ad revenue coming off of YouTube from such a big film, and they're like, oh, crap.
Prelude to Axanar was very well done, so, like, the actual Axanar movie, I can't imagine the quality being any less, so, yeah, I think that's a good point you're making there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the other, I mean, like, if you look at the other fan, like, the big fan films that have been made recently, like, the Power Rangers one, do you guys remember that from, like, maybe 6 months ago?
I heard about it.
Yeah, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, like, the R-rated Power Rangers movie. I was not even a Power Rangers fan, and I checked it out.
Yeah.
But nobody came after them about it, roughly because...
They did that with Mortal Kombat, too. There's, like, a Mortal Kombat,
mm-hmm.
like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, they do all, like... Well, and that ended up getting picked up. And like,
but that's like, it's good publicity for the brand too.
It's good branding for it, but then also like, if it's privately funded and the big people at a company feel like, oh well, it's just this person's passion project and they funded it.
Yeah,
they don't give a shit
yeah.
because it's not like they're bringing in revenue. Once you start bringing in revenue from fans, that's when companies get scared
yeah.
because that's like, oh, that's a buck
that's
we could have made,
yeah,
and we didn't make it. So,
well, the thing is with Star Trek. It's been forever since they put out a decent TV show. So,
Star Trek Quantum Leap.
That wasn't Star Trek. Quantum Leap?
No, the one
Enterprise.
Yeah, okay, with the Quantum Leap guy.
With the Quantum Leap guy.
Yeah,
he's referring to.
I assume that what it was that the Quantum Leap guy leaped into somebody in the Star Trek universe. And
that's
Dean
good.
Stockwell was around with Ziggy and doing
his
whole thing.
That would have been awesome. If they could have gotten Dean Stockwell on Enterprise, that would have been freaking sweet.
They did do it?
Not that I know of.
I don't think they did. That's
like
a huge missed opportunity.
Well, and you know that guy. See, he's going to work for like a food stamp at 50
Dean
bucks.
Dean Stockwell,
like,
he was in Battlestar. He was Silent number one.
Does Dean Stockwell still work?
Yeah.
No.
He worked as of the end of Battlestar.
Dean Stockwell was in, he did voice acting for Batman Beyond.
Yeah,
doing what?
As an older Robin, as an older.
Oh, he's like old Dick Grayson.
Yeah, I mean,
he's an old Tim Drake.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I did not know that was him.
Dean Stockwell has the illustrious ending Dean Stockwell has in Battlestar Galactica is that when he sees all these carefully laid plans of fucking over all the Cylons and the humans, he's like, oh frack, and he just blows his own brains out. And that's...
Really? That's the end of his character
That's
arc?
The end of his character. Oh, frack. And
wow.
then just blows his head off.
He was such an awesome... Did you go watch Quantum Leap?
Oh, I love Quantum Leap. That
Quantum
show
was
great.
Was a fucking great show.
I heard it's a great show, but I've never seen it.
That it's easily one of the best sci-fi shows I've ever
really?
Seen.
Yeah.
Because it's that's a show that's actually about humanity and morality. And, like, this dude who gets trapped and travels back in time and tries to set things that went wrong correctly.
And hope that the next leap will be the leap.
It's so fucking
Dude,
good.
Tell them about this.
It's so basically, this doctor develops a technology, Scott Bakula, develops a technology that allows him to go in and inhabit bodies of people in the past. And he accidentally triggers it, goes back in time. So, like, every episode is just him solving problems. So, like, sometimes he's, like, a black woman in the 1960s. Sometimes he's, like, a disco magnate who got too coked out and, like, fucking, you know, destroyed someone's career and he's got to make their career okay again. I mean, there's a whole story about, like, his brother died in Vietnam and at one point did you see this episode? It was the most heartbreaking episode. He leaps into the body of one of the platoon mates of his brother who died in Vietnam and it's his job to save his brother who
Holy
didn't die.
Fuck.
It's fucked up.
And Dean Stockwell plays his little AI computer dude who's like an invisible hologram only he can see.
And who's
kind of
like from
him.
The future, who
yeah.
like guides him, who's like trying to tell him what has to happen in order to get him to the next leap. Because if he doesn't complete the thing, he doesn't leap to the next person.
Yeah. So like there's like all these, I never really got like the historical breakdown of it. Like because he leaped into, because he initiated the quantum leap, like, all these little time fractures happen, and then he has to fix them to get back to his original state. I think that's how it goes. So, like, all the things, like, all these alternate histories started playing out, he has to fix them to get himself back to the original state.
I think it's almost supposed to be, like, he lives in the ideal life. He lives in, like, the Gene Roddenberry future.
Yeah.
And he goes back into our past and has to correct it to make it the Gene Roddenberry future. It's
yeah.
kind of what it is.
Did he make it home?
I feel like in the last episode, what ends up happening is that he is, spoiler alert for Quantum Leap, which
Quantum
ended
Leap.
In like the early 80s. 90s.
Yeah, right?
I'm pretty sure what ends up happening is he essentially becomes like the time god at some point.
So it becomes, like, Doctor Who?
Yeah, kind of. Like, he gains the ability to just leap. like, wherever he needs to go. Like, he becomes, like, a time superhero. Like, he can jump into anybody and fix anything at any point in history.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's kind of
that's
neat.
Kind of like Doctor Who. Wow,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
Amazing.
He becomes the first Doctor.
Well, that's cool. Oh.
Like, and then eventually he leaps into Voyager and
yeah.
becomes Scott Bakula.
Or you mean being leaped into Enterprise.
Yeah, Enterprise.
But he, like, when he looks in the mirror, he looks like himself. But to everybody else, he looks like the other people.
Right.
It's so cool.
And every episode ends with him leaping to his next leap. So you would know what the next episode was going to be. And he looks into a mirror and he goes, oh boy.
Yeah,
and
oh boy.
It's always like, the most fucked up one was, the one that really haunted me was he leaped into somebody and he looks in the mirror and it's somebody who has Down syndrome.
Oh,
and I was like, and he goes, oh boy. And I was like, that's so fucked up. Like, how do you deal with that? Like,
next week on a very special
exactly. Oh, you have to watch that show. I'm pretty sure
it's on Netflix. I have like picked up an episode every now and again.
I hear it's good. I might check it out.
Dude, it's so
good.
Fucking good.
Is there anything, Steven, that you wanted to bring to the table this week?
Okay, now that we are firmly in 2016.
Yeah.
10 days in.
Yeah.
Let's do a quick little best of 2015.
Okay.
Mars, go ahead.
Oh, but wait, what?
Best movies, best video game? Like, what was your pinnacle of 2015?
Wow. 2015.
Whether it's a movie, a video game, just like, what was the height of 2015?
The height of 2015, as opposed to media, I think, like, would be two things for me. One of them would be, and I think you guys did a podcast about this already, so I won't belabor it too much, it would be Star Wars Episode 7.
That was your height?
No.
He's so freaking about
that.
Sorry, are you just talking like the best moment for us?
It can be your best moment, best piece of media.
Just the
best
is the best.
That would be, I'll give a B minus. I said I was a huge Star Wars fan. I think the peak for social media, or for gaming or whatnot, or entertainment media, let's put it that way, for all of 2015. I would have to say the release of Metal Gear Solid 5.
That was your moment, huh?
That was my moment. And, like, they had Batman Arkham Knight, which I enjoyed, but I didn't like all that much. Metal Gear Solid 5 was awesome because I thought that the, the last time I did a podcast with you guys, it was on the idea of what made a good twist.
Mm-hmm.
And Metal Gear Solid 5, it's been out there for a long time right now, so I don't think I'm spoiling it for anybody. It's there's a big twist in the storyline in which you realize...
We cover that. It's
yeah.
The boss is not one person.
Yeah, you aren't actually playing as big boss, but if you follow the series faithfully all the way through all the games, through Peace Walker, through Portable Ops and whatnot, you really are playing Big Boss in a certain way because it's a legend, and like it's the idea of the legend being a mixture of truth, lies, and
somewhere
somewhere in between mythology. I that was a very, very interesting twist on the series, and the gameplay was excellent.
I feel like I have to go play this game now.
I think it's up your alley.
Yeah.
Did it all for revenge, boss.
And that game, in my opinion, was probably. It's unfortunate that Hideo Kojima couldn't take it all the way to completion, but it was.
It's always unfortunate when they can't take it all the way to completion.
It was a good game. I thought overall it was fairly well done, and they really had
a lot of fun chest.
There. It was fantastic. Yeah.
I'm wondering where Kojima's going to go this year. I mean, with this whole fall of Konami, what's his next project going
to
be?
I want to know what they're going to do for Metal Gear Solid 6.
If there's going to be one.
I think there is.
They'll know that count.
Can there be Metal Gear, Konami Metal Gear without Kojima?
Of course. I don't think so, but like we'll see.
If all you have to do, here's a Metal Gear deck, is you write on a bunch, like roughly 400 note cards.
Yeah.
Random piece of dialogue that sounds cryptic. Throw it in the air and then arrange it in an order. And that's your story, essentially, at this point.
There's a little bit more to it than that, but yeah.
Lalelelo?
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself, Kojima.
Well, in that case, yeah, I do agree with you, Steven, because I think there are definitely parts of the Metal Gear series that could have done substantially better. Part two, in my opinion, was the shittiest part of the entire series because it was so convoluted, it was so mixed up, it didn't make any sense.
One of the major things that 5 did for me this year was get to the Man Who Sold the World stuck in my head for like 2 weeks straight.
I finished the Man Who Sold the World. David Bowie.
See, that to me,
there are
only two songs in the Metal Gear series for me. One is Snake Eater, which is like the greatest James Bond song that's not a James Bond song. The other one was The Best Is Yet to Come. The opening song in... No.
Not that one. Okay.
It's the one that opens...
Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah, the original Metal Gear Solid, where he's swimming underneath,
the
Gaelic. The Gaelic. Oh, it's so fucking
good. That was good.
Haunting.
Yeah.
Fucking haunting.
It was good for the, series because... We need to talk about this on another podcast in which we're talking about the inclusion of music into video games.
Oh yeah, we need to do
because
music
helps tell the story. And like, I'll start it off here in using The Best Is Yet to Come to how well it worked with Metal Gear Solid 1, Solid Snake, because they released a soundtrack a few months ago with Metal Gear Solid 5, and they actually gave, I'm not sure which language it was sung in, but Donna Brooke did a remake of it, and she actually sung the lyrics in English.
Is it less powerful in English?
Yes and no. Yes, in the fact that it didn't come across as, it wasn't as sonorous, but... No, in the aspect in that it was spoken in English, and it was a way it was spoken in a language that you and I could understand.
Right.
So it really illustrated. Like if you take a look at Solid Snake's journey in Metal Gear Solid 1, as someone who comes across as someone who cares only for himself, and you see later on throughout the entire story how he accepts himself as a being who has a name. He admits that his name is not Solid Snake. It's not something people call him. It's David.
David?
David is kind of
a pussy name.
Well, hold on.
David
fights Goliath.
He's talking about how he actually cares about someone other than... as an individual rather than someone who's just the button on the warfield. He sees life as something and something that's worth living in. And you see the theme of the musical tone, The Best Is Yet to Come, interact with them and that story that leads to some pretty powerful storytelling.
It feels weird that if like you get the ending where he rides off in the sunset with Otacon, like, that feels super fucking weird.
That one doesn't work all that well, but I think the one
it works pretty well given that like Otacon ran out to the middle of the ice field where there's a sniper, mind you, and it's like, do you think love can bloom on a battlefield?
Yeah, there was some definite overtones on that one.
Like, it's okay. We live in the 21st century where we accept gay couples, and it's cool. Like, I feel like that was kind of the hidden agenda.
There was a Let's Play that I was watching of MGS5 where the girl that was doing the play with her husband was constantly just, like, hoping, like, beyond, like oh, I really hope that Ocelot and Bond hook up. And 5.
Oh, is it
five,
Ocelot?
Yeah, Revolver Ocelot. He's like, I want Ocelot or Miller to end up with Boss. And, like, she just...
Really?
Like,
she was shipping the gay couple.
It's, like, fanfic in her head about it. What about you, Steve? What was your top tip of 2016?
My high point of 2015.
Number 15. God, I'm jumping ahead.
Came right at the end.
Yeah.
It was a buzzer beater. Right before that, I would say the high point of 2015 before this event was... probably watching, like, the Batman Superman trailer.
Yeah.
To me, like, the stone cold high point was watching Creed.
Man.
Creed was a good movie.
Oh, I'm out of loop on
Creed
this.
Creed is fucking, like, the best superhero movie that you haven't seen yet.
Wow.
Like,
wow, okay.
The continuity in it is so great. It links up to the other movies, pays reverence to them, and also creates this new origin story for this new superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Superhero? I mean, essentially, that's what all the Rocky movies are. They're superhero movies.
No,
an American real life.
Exactly. Like, the modern day Rocky is Batman. Like, kids in, like, I remember when I was a kid, before Batman was, like, when Batman was a joke and not really a thing, I remember kids running around and playing Rocky in the playground. Like, I'm Rocky, I'm tough, blah, blah, blah. Like, now that has transitioned into Batman. But, to me, like, this is the beginning of something new and different.
that is so amazing and so inspired. Like, I was inspired after watching Creed.
I gotta see this movie. You were inspired?
It's amazing.
I have to disagree a little bit in some aspects, because the whole appeal of the Rocky movies, with the exception of a few movies, and don't get me wrong, like, I saw Creed and I liked it. But in my opinion, looking at the Rocky series, some people who, like, I went to go see the movies with some relatives, and one of the relatives I went to go see it with was kind of poo-pooed the movie at the outset.
No way!
She thought it was just a quote-unquote fighting movie. But if you look at it from a certain aspect, it's really not about boxing. It's really not about fighting. It's about, like, being able to step up and be something more than what you are. And it's done from a very, very human aspect. Rocky essentially was someone who's a nobody, who found someone who believed in them, and who grew into something phenomenal.
Grew into more than what he could be.
And that's why I take issue with the superhero part. And that's essentially what the movie is. I was a huge fan of Rocky Balboa because...
That was a great flick.
But it played homage to the original Rocky 1 and 2, in which you see someone who's a nobody become somebody through dedication, through training, through a mentor who believed in them.
Through force of will, and
someone who beat the odds. And in part 5, you see someone who's... part six. Yeah, you're correct. Rocky Balboa, who's someone who's thought of as washed up and beyond his time. He's essentially playing a George Foreman role, and he comes back and is able to beat the odds once again. And that's someone who's very, very human, who just beats the odds. So he's not really so much a superhero as he is an individual who has an incredible strength of will. So someone who's really very, very human, who's able to come up and against incredible odds and overcome them.
But
that's the theme of the whole series. And you see Creed, and it's essentially a retelling of the whole series, passing it on to a new generation. So, you know, I don't think it's a superhero movie. Calling it a superhero movie, in my opinion, takes away from it. He's a hero in the aspect in that he's doesn't have any special powers, he doesn't have any special abilities. He just has an incredible work ethic. He has an incredible sense of...
But that's like Batman.
Also, does Batman?
I mean,
yeah,
it's
different motivation.
Yeah, but by my opinion, Batman is not really a superhero for that aspect.
Well,
no powers, no special abilities, just a lot of money, a lot of really intelligent. Someone who's really. All
right, next week we're gonna talk about what defines a superhero.
Okay, but at any rate, my opinion about Creed is just that it is such an uplifting and amazing movie.
Sure.
It is a movie that needs to be seen by this generation, because it is this generation's Rocky movie. It is inspiring, and, I mean, there are moments in that movie that my heart just... As somebody who loves Rocky, and has, like, loved Rocky since birth, it was one of the movies I remember watching with my father. Like, one of the first movies I remember watching with my dad is watching Rocky movies. And it made my heart soar. And there were definitely times where like my girlfriend and I were sitting in the theater, and she looks over at me, and I'm like bobbing and weaving with Adonis Creed as he's like fighting fights. And I'm like, get the body, hit the body, hit the body. And I'm cheering him on. And I'm like, I'm there with him. I'm like his mitt, because I've been with Rocky on his journey. So if you are a big fan of Rocky, you cast yourself in that Rocky role of like, I am trying to help this kid, and like, you want to be a part of that, and you become a part of it, and it's so magical, and it's so great.
Okay, I gotta check this out. Is it still in theaters?
It's still in theaters.
Yeah,
I mean,
right. It's worth seeing.
I mean, the ending scene, like, you know,
yeah,
the ending. Okay. There's an ending scene where, I'm not gonna give a spoiler, but there is an ending scene where like, it breaks your heart and it uplifts you at the same time. Like, it's just, it has to be watched. Like Bob, you have to watch this movie, and we need to talk about it.
I'll go see it. I'll go see it this week.
Like, I literally, I'm
get
getting goosebumps just
talking
like,
about it.
Oh God, it's so fucking good. So good.
All right. It's definitely, I really like the movie and the,
let me see it and then we'll talk about it.
Sure. But I'll end by saying this. Michael B. Johnson, he did a Jordan, I'm sorry. Yeah, Michael B. Jordan did a phenomenal job as the young Creed, as Rocky's apprentice. And I think tonight, Sylvester Stallone just won the best won award for being the best supporting actor.
And
what did he win?
Golden Globe.
Tonight's the Golden Globes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we'll do a Golden Globe wrap-up.
My brother is the cameraman on that. I forgot. I totally told him. He's like, yeah, do the Golden Globes.
Stallone does a great performance. His performance as Rocky is amazingly good. And this is a character he's been, what, 6 times?
Yeah.
This is now his 7th time. It's so good that if he doesn't win an Oscar for this,
he'll never win for anything else.
Oh, like, I'll burn my house down. Like, it's insane.
We'll never have no place to cast.
Marvel HQ will go up in flames. Honestly, like, his performance is so good. Like, it's transcendent of anything he's done. And not only that, but, like, he needs to win the award just for the story aspect of, like, he wrote this movie to start his career back, you know, in the 70s. And now he's coming full circle and going to win another Academy Award.
Excellent point.
As an actor. Like,
yes.
That's amazing. It's mind-blowing.
That,
like,
really
that
cool.
Story is so amazing. Like, it has to happen.
Someone's
going to
make a movie about this.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, about,
there should be a movie
about
this
about
movie.
About the making of Rocky, yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
That's the beauty of the Rocky movies. Because, you know, when you look at them, like, I won't count some of the movies because some of them
No, all of them are amazing.
Some of them are just action-oriented. But if you look at them, a lot of them have the theme of being able to see where you are at a certain point in your life and just believing in yourself and have someone believing in you to become something more than what you are. And
oddly enough,
that's a timeless theme. It's a timeless
same
things theme.
Evoked very well in the Pokemon animated series.
I want to be the
very
best, like no one ever was.
Exactly.
To catch them is my real test.
To train them is my cause. There you go.
Can you do the whole song?
I can.
I will
travel across the land, searching far and wide. Dun, dun, dun. Each Pokemon
to understand the power that's inside. Pokemon.
Oh, well, we know what the lead-in for this episode is.
Oh
lead
god!
Out
oh, this is amazing.
So I'll go see it, and then we will convene and have a
like
full-on discussion.
I
feel
like it.
Yeah.
Tears in my eyes the entire fucking movie.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. My highlight for 2015, aside from Star Wars,
was Star Wars really up there for you?
I was looking.
Was it close?
I was moved.
To me, Star Wars wasn't up there.
But I got to, like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the video game Final Fantasy X, or what your feelings are about it.
Which is 10?
10 is with Tidus and Yuna and.
Oh yeah.
Blitzball. Spear and Blitzball.
Yeah.
Not my favorite Final Fantasy. But I like it. And,
I liked the dude who had the glasses who did, like, the kind of, like, Clint Eastwood. Yeah, the Clint Eastwood. Yeah.
Yeah, Orin. Definitely, like, one of the best characters in that game.
Best characters in Final Fantasy. Like, visually.
Yeah, really, really designed. But anyway, I got to basically live in Xanarkand for a week this year.
Please explain.
I was in Hawaii for a year, and the whole time I was there, I was playing the Final Fantasy X soundtrack, because, I mean, that game, all the locations, like, when they recon places for doing it, it's all tropical.
Oh,
it's
really?
All tropical places. And, I mean, it's not my favorite game, but it's in my top 5, I would say my top 10 RPG games that I like.
Really?
Yeah, I like it.
It's that strong for you?
Yeah, and
okay.
I mean, I think it has to do a lot with the visuals and the music, but... it's really good. Anyway,
we need to do that as a casto at some point.
Xanarkand and Bisei, two of the settings there. Like, I was staying in Hawaii in this house on the beach, and about the last couple nights I was going out surfing in the middle of the night at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it looks like Xanarkand. Like the starry sky across, like the galaxy spread right across the sky,
mm-hmm.
like chandelier, like. Just clear crystal water, bioluminescent algae and fish. Just like it looked like Final Fantasy. Like I was there.
Right.
This is what they were trying to get to, except it was real.
Oh.
So I'm surfing in this like just Final Fantasy setting, and then
playing Blitzball is one of those.
Playing Blitzball. And but that, I mean, and that alone would have been awesome. Like, I was like a peace and a calm and
you played
just like
that
a fulfilling of a fantasy that I've always had for my whole life. And so I went there and achieved it. Also, in the game, Titus has to come to a reconciliation with
right.
his father. I went with my father and my brothers.
Uh-huh.
And so over the course of those 10 days, you know, as a family, we kind of solidified and talked and kind of, my father's elderly and he's just getting on in years. And, you know, I kind of came to a couple good, solid realizations and connections with my father. Kind of like Titus in the end.
Okay.
So, like, I kind of felt like I lived Final Fantasy X for, like, 10 days.
You felt like you were a blonde, tan, Japanese teenager.
Yeah, I was a K-pop star.
Yeah.
That laughs obnoxiously.
Right.
And is always hungry.
That game is so fucking bad, dude.
It's
such a fucking bad game.
It's not the best. It's not like...
I could not get into Final Fantasy X.
I played through it, and it was fucking horrendous.
But it was a very rewarding experience for me.
The best part of that game was Chewbacca with the spear.
Chewbacca. Yeah. Video game-wise, so many good games that came out this year. I like Shovel Knight. Did you guys play Shovel Knight?
I did. Nope.
I like that game. That was a lot of fun. Bloodborne was freaking amazing.
Darkest Dungeon was my best game of the year.
Darkest Dungeon?
Darkest Dungeon was fucking good.
I'm gonna have to think and come back to you about, like, my favorite game. I have to think about this a little more.
We need to do, like, a 2015 real wrap-up. Because, like, to me, like, Creed was the highlight, but, like, there were definitely... Like, I wouldn't even necessarily put Creed as, like, my best movie of the year. It's my favorite movie of the year,
yeah.
But, like...
Oh, my favorite... One of my favorite movies of the year, I don't know if this is a garner many nerd points, but, I thought, Straight Outta Compton. If you guys didn't
see
that
one,
yet.
That
shit was great.
Really?
That was amazing.
How was Ice Cube's son?
Damn, amazing. It was just like him. I was blown
really?
Away. I was freaking blown away about how well portrayed it was.
Okay, all right. I'm in.
So, yeah, and of course, and the soundtrack was awesome.
Yeah, it's
but,
NWA.
Straight Outta Compton was a really good film. I really liked Straight Outta Compton.
you're fucking beaming about Straight Outta Compton.
I mean, yeah, it was great. I mean, what other big hitters we have? We had Avengers, Ultron, which is okay.
I just watched Ultron.
It was okay.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean,
same thing with Ant-Man. Ant-Man was okay.
No, I liked Ant-Man more than I liked.
You liked Ant-Man more than Avengers?
Yeah, I would put Ant-Man on a top 10 list.
Oh,
definitely.
Wow. Okay.
Those movies are fun, but like, the Creed... I agree with you. Had the most substance.
Oh,
Martian was
good.
You guys see the
Martian?
Martian
was excellent.
I haven't watched Martian.
Yeah.
The Martian yet.
You are the Martian.
Yeah, I am the Martian.
You are the Martian.
I am the Martian.
So let's do a recap next week, and we'll
do a 2015.
We'll do a 2015.
A 2015 roundup.
Yeah, because we got to wrap it up.
Leading into 2016. 2016's got some good stuff coming.
Oh yeah.
Can we end the show on what is our best thing of 2016? What are we looking forward to most? So that way, when we do this cast again a year from now,
yeah.
We can look back and be like, I was such a fool.
Maybe Batman versus
Superman.
We will see. I am skeptical, but we'll see.
You're skeptical?
I am skeptical.
Why?
Some of it looks pretty bad.
No. What looks bad about this
movie? I've got high hopes for that.
I like Jesse Eisenacher.
Eisenknocker.
I'm sorry, Jesse Eisenberg. I think he looks pretty cool as an actor, but I can't see him as Lex Luthor. And
we've seen two minutes of a 2.5-hour film.
True, very, very, very true.
And not even like a full. It's like 20
and,
seconds.
Yeah.
People were very, very skeptical of Heath Ledger doing the Joker, but he did a phenomenal job. So
yeah.
we'll see how Henry Cavill does as Superman. We'll see how Ben Affleck does as Batman. I'm willing to give those guys a shot. And we'll see what happens. Like, you know, I'm willing to give these. You know, they're all arguably good actors, and
yeah.
and I'm looking forward to seeing how they pull off the Justice League.
There is
we'll
so much
happens.
Coming out this year. You've got Deadpool coming up in February.
Civil War.
You got Civil War. We've got Batman vs Superman. We've got Rogue One.
Fuck Rogue One.
I'm
we'll watch it again.
Donnie Yen and Felicity Jones.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Is there going to be another Asian in the Star Wars universe?
Yeah, Yip Man 3 from Hong Kong is coming out in the U.S. in a few months, and the Yip Man movies are pretty good.
And 2 was not great.
Two was decent.
No, what?
Two was decent.
Okay.
Two was decent. There is a series of movies about the guy who trained Bruce Lee. And
none of which were real, by the way.
Yeah, they're all bullshit movies. But they're fucking great action movies to watch. One was amazing. Two was, have you seen Rocky IV?
Yeah.
Bringing it back to Rocky. It's essentially Rocky IV with Chinese Rocky. That's essentially what this is. It's not great. Three, I have no idea what it's about. I hope it's with Clubber Lang.
Mike Tyson is in the movie.
Oh my god, does he play Clubber Lang?
No.
This would be amazing if they did
in a movie. They have a scene in the movie where they have two rival sects of Lee and Sean fighting each other, the Sun Lung branch and the Yip Man branch. That's going to be a very interesting drama, I imagine.
Okay, so we got to nail it down to just like...
Okay, one thing.
Batman vs. Superman is mine.
Batman vs. Superman, yeah. I mean,
games, Final Fantasy 15, if they decide to release it this year. And television, Game of Thrones.
See, I would go Batman vs. Superman, Game of Thrones. My favorite, the game that I'm most anticipating this year is probably the new XCOM game.
Okay.
I love a turn-based strategy game. Oh,
that sounds really. I'm thinking either Dark Souls 3 for me or Final Fantasy 15.
I'm not really so much into games this year.
Are you kidding me?
I don't see anything that really interests me.
XCOM 2!
I'll have to say, like, probably Star Wars Rogue One is at the top of my list, and maybe Batman vs. Superman. We'll see.
You're waiting a long time for Rogue One.
Yeah.
Rogue One might be about Rogue Squadron. That'll be interesting. We'll see.
What about television? Anything you're looking forward to on TV?
Television, I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to complete season 4 of Arrow, which is one of my favorite shows on
Arrow.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh yeah,
we will
see
how that
goes.
They got some good storytelling on the show. They got some good actors on the show. I heard Mr. Clark Gregg, who plays Agent Phil Coulson, recently just got his black belt. If you listen to this, congratulations to him. It's a huge accomplishment, and like hopefully we'll get to see some
martial arts.
We'll get to see him use some Brazilian jiu-jitsu on the show. And that'll be awesome. So, you know, Clark Gregg, if you're listening to this, that'd be awesome. If you convince people to let you demonstrate your skills on the show.
I'm looking forward.
Very cool.
I'm looking forward to some more, fill in the blanks comics from Star Wars and from DC Universe after Batman vs. Superman comes out. Cool, because I want to see if DC is going to play up the Batman vs. Superman angle.
Are you reading Dark Knight?
Right now, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, DK3?
Yeah.
How do you like it?
Really?
See, I've only read the first issue, but I liked it.
We'll cover that next time. We got to wrap it up for tonight.
Okay.
But until next week, you've been nerd funneled.
I love you.